Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm Holly Rubenstein. I'm a travel and entertainment journalist. And here each week, I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Today is a very special episode. It's an unusual one because, in a way, it's both a guest episode and a destination special, celebrating all things about the island of Ireland. I'm joined today by the Irish DJ, broadcaster and writer Annie Mack. Now, Annie's been in the news a bit recently because after 17 years as one of BBC Radio 1's most loved DJs, she has left the station. And the video of her playing her final song went viral online, I think simply because she's such a legend in the industry and a big part of the lives of so many music lovers. So this farewell was a huge deal. We talk about how she became a DJ and presenter and her illustrious career and what that involved. And then her travel diaries chapters are all focused on destinations across Ireland, the place where she grew up, travels back to as much as she can and knows so well. And then later, I'm joined by travel writer and island expert Aoife O'Riordan, who shares some really brilliant tips. In particular, some amazing foodie recommendations and a hotel that I'd never heard of on an Irish island that I'd also never heard of that has gone straight to the top of my hotel wish list. I mean, Aoife's husband was actually the producer of Normal People, you know, the show we all watched last summer. So she gives us a little insight into the making of that too. There is so much to cover today, so let's get started. Here's Annie Mack. Annie Mack, welcome to the Travel Diaries and to this inspiring Ireland destination special. It's a total honour to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me, Holly. I'm always happy to talk to you and happy to talk about Ireland, so it's a good day.
Great. Well, I mean, it's safe to say that Ireland must have inspired you in many ways.
I mean, yeah, it's, but don't really know where to start with that. Like, it's Irishness, especially when you don't live there, becomes magnified and really becomes part of your identity in a much bigger way than I think if you stayed there, because, you know, as anyone who leaves the country that they were born in, you find yourself clinging on to anything that can help you figure out who you are in the world, you know. And my Irishness means a lot to me because of that. I've lived away from Ireland longer than I've actually lived in Ireland now. I crossed that threshold about a year ago. And especially in the wake of kind of, you know, the context of a pandemic where we were stuck where we were, I really realized how much my Irishness meant to me and how much need I have as a person to go to Ireland in order to be happy. So I've been thinking a lot about it recently.
So we're going to uncover your Irish travel diaries across five chapters. But first, I just thought it'd be great to hear a bit more about life growing up in Dublin. I mean, one of the world's most vibrant cities. What was it like spending your youth there?
So I grew up in, I think I was the first baby to be born in my housing estate, actually. That's my local claim to fame. And it was very kind of normal housing estate in the suburbs of South Dublin, all pebble dash, semi-detached houses. And it's kind of set not right under, but just kind of like in the valley underneath the Dublin Mountains. So from our back garden, you could see Tignock, which is a famous mountain in the Dublin Mountains. So I was the youngest of four. My memories are very much that kind of idyllic upbringing in a housing estate. So those worlds where you're just outside all day, basically. And my mum would call us in for bath time or dinner time, and we would have been outside all day playing with the neighbours. My next door neighbour was my best friend in the world.
Where everyone knows everyone.
Yeah, everyone knows everyone. It felt very safe. Also, being the youngest of four, you know, having big brothers and a big sister, you have the security of them, you know. So, yeah, it was a really lovely childhood. We didn't travel that much within Ireland. I think we had the odd summer holiday down in Wexford Coast. But most of our holidays were spent going to my mum's house, which was in Northern Ireland. So I spent a lot of time driving up and down the East Coast and going up to a place called Rasharkin in County Antrim in rural Northern Ireland. So I have a lot of nice memories there.
So that was your earliest childhood travel memory in Ireland, would you say?
Yeah, so earliest earliest childhood memory of travel would be squished up in the back seat with my brothers and sister all elbowing each other, driving. It was about a 3-hour drive up north, East Coast, through Newry and around Belfast and then into Antrim and Rasharkin. And my grandmother, Granny Rachel, lived in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, basically.
What was the landscape like around, like passing from Dublin up into Belfast and beyond?
It was just green. Like it was just green rolling hills. I have memories of feeding cows, standing on gates and feeding cows. I remember the feeling of their tongue. There was really rough tongues that they had, feeding them grass. And I remember running around the fields and climbing trees and getting chased by a bull across a field with my brothers. Just amazing kind of bucolic adventures where we were kind of allowed to roam free. So there's a real feeling of freedom being there, you know, of there being kind of no end and no beginning to where you could and couldn't go. Yes, there was farmers' fields that we didn't know, but we just went there anyway. And compared to Dublin where, just, you know, our initial street was safe, but, you know, there was, you know, you couldn't go further. Couldn't go into the monastery at the bottom of the road. Couldn't really go into the school. You couldn't go as far as the local park. So there was, you know, there was a boundaries. So yeah, I've got really nice memories of Northern Ireland and that are mostly just kind of rural, based on fields and animals and soda bread and my grandmother.
That's lovely. And of course, Dublin is known for its like thriving music scene. It's one of the things that I love about visiting Dublin. At what point did you know that music was going to play a part in your future?
It wasn't until I went to university that I knew that, but I was kind of surrounded by music. My two biggest brothers and my sister they all just played. Like my house was full of musical instruments. My biggest brother played the banjo, the mandolin, this beautiful instrument called the bouzouki, which is a cross between a banjo and a mandolin, I think. My other brother played the guitar, the piano, the accordion. My sister was the rebel. She was like the Lisa Simpson of the family. She played the saxophone in her room. She rejected traditional Irish music. She was more into kind of dance music and pirate radio and that kind of thing. And then I played the mandolin and the guitar and a bit of piano. So it was just like, it was just music. It was just everywhere.
It's interesting that you were all drawn to like traditional Irish instruments as well.
I mean, I guess it was Ireland. So, it was very normal to you know, that music is huge in Ireland. Like
it's
I used to
learn.
Part
of your heritage.
Yeah, right. So my biggest brother was into it. He was really into a band called the Pogues, which were, you know, the Pogues are amazing because they are essentially a folk punk band. So they really embrace Irish tradition and Irish culture, but kind of through the lens of like London punk. So they were, you know, you had bowrons on stage and mandolins and banjos and but you also had electric guitars and saxophones. And so they kind of were a fusion, I suppose, that made trad Irish music really exciting. And my brother was, both my brothers were mad for them. And my youth is just, all the Pogues albums was just, they were just everywhere in my house. And so they were a big influence kind of subliminally on me, I think, as big brothers and sisters music is, you know, you can't help but be influenced by that. But for me personally, I started really getting into music when I was in my teens and I was discovering myself and I was discovering black music, you know, bands like Massive Attack and also techno. I remember getting the Left Field album and Goldie's album Timeless, like these really alien, strange sounds that I'd never heard before that represented cultures that I'd never experienced before, West Indian cultures and, you know, dub and reggae and all of that biz. And it just felt so exciting and something that I wanted to learn more about. And that is kind of that, I think I remember like hearing that kind of music and just being like, whoa, okay, there's a whole world out there that I need to know. You know, music kind of opens doors in that way.
Yeah, and obviously it just sparked a curiosity of knowledge that then continues to this day in terms of discovery of music.
Yeah, exactly. So music has this way of like, it's kind of like the Hansel and Gretel leaving breadcrumbs. You know, you discover yeah. one thing, and then that opens a door to another, to a label where you discover more, which opens a door to like a bass player in a band who's amazing. So you go and see what else they've done. And it's just this dot joining process. But I kind of didn't start collecting records really until I was in university. And up to that point, I'd really wanted to be an actress.
Right.
And I didn't get into the course that I wanted to go. There was a course in Trinity College, which is the university of normal people, for all those people who aren't Irish.
Yeah.
And that was like the big drama course. And I had no real experience of doing drama, like apart from being in a school play. And I just totally flopped the audition. Totally.
And
was so angry with myself, and ended up going to Queen's as a kind of, just like as a, oh, well, I don't know what else to do, I'll just go there. Because my mum went there, Queen's University in Belfast.
Queen's is in Belfast, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And your mum went there. Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I went there and then ended up having the most amazing time, like these kind of three transformative years where I discovered club culture and ended up working in a nightclub, discovered BBC Radio 1 very significantly, because that's not something that you could have got easily in the Republic of Ireland at the time. Mm. So kind of being open to these DJs like Marianne Hobbs and John Peel and Joe Wiley and Sarah Cox. And just, again, that was the first time actually that I thought music could be a career. Because DJing was something I wanted to do, but it was just not for me. It was like I'd never seen a female DJ in my life. It was like that's got to be some sort of a hobby.
Yeah.
Whereas when I heard women on the BBC radio playing good music, I was like, okay, maybe this could be the place.
That's so interesting. So Chapter 2 is the first place that you fell in love with in Ireland. I'm guessing that might be Belfast when you were at university, was it?
Yeah, I think it probably was. Like Belfast had such a profound effect on me, because to me it really opened up my perspective on the island of Ireland. Having been to Northern Ireland countless times, I'd never been to this side of Northern Ireland. I've never seen the city. I'd never seen youth culture. And I'd never really befriended anyone my own age in Northern Ireland until that point. Mm-hmm. I met some amazing people from Derry, which is still one of my favourite cities in the world. And just kind of made some incredible friendships. And there's something about the people in Belfast, especially, they have all the kind of warmth and conviviality of Irish people, but there's a kind of dryness and a darkness to their humour. There's like a deeper sense of black, obviously because of their reality, you know, and their past. Mm. But I loved their sense of humour, and I felt very welcome there. And just had the most amazing time. And it was also, you know, that transformation from being a child into an adult, like learning how to live by myself and learning how to keep money and, you know, pay bills and just get jobs and survive, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never been to Belfast. So for somebody who would be visiting for the first time, like or planning a trip there, how would you, I suppose, describe it as a city and how to experience it in its best light, I suppose?
I mean, it's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful size. And again, it's surrounded by mountains. So you've got that. I love any cities on the sea. I love Barcelona. Yeah. I love New York. Mm. I love Dublin, Miami. Like Belfast is like that. When you have the sea or water kind of nearby, it kind of gives it a different feel, I think. And then there's mountains around the edges. And I mean, it's fascinating in so many ways. You know, you can do things like the Troubles tours, where you get into a black cab and get driven all around and shown all the murals and shown all the Peace Wall and all the kind of the history of the Troubles of Belfast. There's amazing pubs. There's an amazing art scene, like contemporary art scene as well. And there's brilliant music. I mean, when I was there in the late 90s, it was really an amazing place for techno music. There's something about Northern Ireland where they go for, maybe same reason, same with the humour, they go for the kind of harder edge music. They like it tougher. A lot of big DJs from around the world would come and play in this club called Shine that I worked at. Like some of the best DJs in the world would come there and visit there regularly. So it had an amazing reputation. And I know now still that DJs come there because of the crowd, and the actual atmosphere of venues and of gigs in Belfast in Northern Ireland has a reputation for being so intense and brilliant when you're a performer that people want to go back every time they go there.
And is that what you've experienced yourself DJing there?
Sure, on both sides. Like I was in the crowd for those years as a student. And then afterwards, one of my first gigs back, like when I got my show on Radio 1, one of my first gigs, professional gigs that I got asked to do was to go and play Shine, which was a real terrifying moment because that was the place I'd worked and I'd stamped people's wrists on the way in for years. And it just
what
felt
a full circle.
Yeah. And they were so warm and they were so welcoming. And I just remember feeling so moved by it. And then they asked me to come back and play the last ever show at the Mandela Hall, which is where Shine existed for something like 20 years, and play the last Shine in that space. And that was, I think that was in 2018. And that was incredible. Mm. Like that, yeah. One of my top 10 gigs ever, I think, was that. Just
really?
Because of the emotional connections to the place and to the people, but also because of the atmosphere. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
So you said about becoming a DJ that, you know, it was one of those things that you thought could only really be a hobby. And I mean, it is one of those careers that goes in, you know, with like probably, you know, astronaut and movie star, you know, things that kind of feel pretty unattainable to, you know, the average person growing up in a council estate in Dublin, you know. How did you, or to anyone, I should say, in fact, they feel it's a career that feels like a dream career. And how did you make that your reality? How did that come to fruition?
So, I mean, it was getting the job at Radio 1 that really meant that my DJ career could exist. I was still DJing. I was DJing in a basement club in Camden. There was no way at that point that I was going to become a named DJ. Like there was just, I don't think there was anyway. I wouldn't have known how to even start. And then I got my radio show and people were interested because I was playing dance music. And I think promoters wanted to book me because of the Radio 1 connection and because the radio show was doing well and was taking off. So it was really having that. That really worked for me to be able to go out and play professional gigs. And then off the back of that, I made a name for myself as a DJ and then was able to kind of carry on separately of Radio 1. But initially at the start, Radio 1 really helped.
What was it like your first day hosting your first show in, you know, in being in that booth and seeing, as you said, all the kind of other DJs and hosts around that you'd grown up listening to? You know, how was that?
It was absolutely terrifying. I've been thinking about it a lot because obviously I'm leaving Radio 1, so I've been trying to come back and remember those moments and try and just relive everything. But yeah, I remember the first song and I remember kind of knowing vaguely what I wanted to say, and I just remember the feeling of just it being so thrilling.
What was the first song?
It was a song by High Contrast. It was a drum and bass song called Racing Green. This very happy, kind of euphoric, string-laden drum and bass song. And yeah, it was just such a buzz. It was such a buzz.
So let's pause there and move on to chapter 3, which is your all-time favourite Irish destination. Where would you pick?
Yeah. So we've been on holidays a good few times to Roundstone, which is on the very, very west coast of Ireland, in County Galway. And that whole stretch, like along the west coast of Ireland, is a thing called the Wild Atlantic Way. And it's a route that you can drive down and it kind of keeps you as close to the coast as possible. And, you know, it's the most westerly tip of Europe. It's the last point of Europe before the ocean and America on the other side. And you can really feel that when you're there. The weather is wild. It's completely unpredictable. The landscape is very rugged. It's steeped in history. Around Roundstone, around that whole coastline, County Clare and County Galway, I don't know, there's a lot of history there. During the Irish famine, it was to the west coast where all of the Irish people travelled in order to get their boats to America. So there's a kind of sadness to the history. And then there's also beautiful geographical hotspots like the Burren, which is where I went, you know, you go on school tours there in Ireland. It's it's this like area of kind of rare rock. I should know more about the geographical stuff, but I don't. I wasn't listening on my mm-hmm. school tour. But it's also a place called the Gaeltacht, which is a kind of, it's an area where Irish is still spoken, the language of Irish. And I think a lot of people don't know this about Ireland, is that, you know, obviously like Wales, it has a native, you know, has a native language called Gaelic. And there's still areas where people are fluent in that. And as a person in school, I used to go on summer camps, what we called Irish College, where you'd go and live in a house where they spoke Irish somewhere in remote Ireland in the West, in the Gaeltacht yeah. area. And you would go and learn Irish every day and sing songs in Irish and have conversations in Irish. And it would be like going on a German exchange, but you're literally going in your own country and you're learning your native language. So that was a really special time for me. I did that when I was 13 in the summer once. And I remember being really just struck by the beauty of the area and how different it felt to Dublin, where I grew up. And then since then, my family have started going back to Roundstone, which is kind of further up the coast in Galway. I just love that whole area. Roundstone is really typical Irish town. It's got about 8 pubs and mm-hmm. 1 church and a harbour. And we stayed in various houses around there. And there's a beautiful beach called Dog's Bay. Awful name. Great beach. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of well known for being one of the best beaches in the whole of Ireland. This like really? Big, beautiful golden sand. So yeah, I just love that kind of west coast of Ireland, Clare and Galway, those two counties. Is, if I was saying to people to go to Ireland, I would say it's a must-see situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that Wild Atlantic Way is on my travel wish list, because as you say, right. the landscape, a great place for a road trip, actually.
I've always wanted to do that. Really, I wanted to take a month and go from Donegal all the way down. It would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? It's interesting, actually, because I've read quite a lot of blogs, because I am actually really hoping to do this trip. And they say, you know, you can't do it quickly. That whole yeah. West Coast, there's so much to see, and it's big.
Yeah. You might want more than a month. Yeah. I would love more than a month, like 6 weeks, because you want to stay a couple of days in all the places.
Exactly, and really absorb them. Mm. How about a favourite hotel? Have you stayed in a lot of hotels across Ireland? Any that particularly come to mind?
Not really, actually, because whenever I go to Ireland, I stay at home or stay in Airbnb.
I was wondering that, yeah.
But there is a place that I do stay in a hotel, and that is Dingle, which is a gorgeous little town in County Kerry. So it's a good kind of 4 or 5 hours from Dublin if you fly into Dublin. It's at the kind of mm-hmm. most southwesterly tip of Ireland.
Right.
And it is a beautiful town, famous for a dolphin called Fungi, who now sadly passed away, as if 2020 couldn't get any worse.
Oh, no.
I think it was last year. But it's big, it's bohemian, it's full of amazing art and full of amazing music. And it's there that I present an Irish TV show called Other Voices, which yeah. is kind of like a Jules Holland style show. But it's all set in a church, this really small little church in the middle of Dingle. And since working there, I've had the most amazing experiences of interviewing artists that kind of blow in from all over the world. Amazing nights out, amazing just evenings being moved to tears watching live music. Yeah. And I always stay, everyone, the staff, all stay in the same hotel, which is called Benner's Hotel, which is right in the main street of Dingle. Mm-hmm. So I have many memories of that hotel just as a kind of hub of a place where you meet brilliant people, where you have great pints, where you mm-hmm. eat loads of bowls of chowder and have many late nights and kind of lock-ins where people are picking up guitars in the foyer and singing until 2-3 in the morning.
Oh, how amazing.
Just that really amazing. Vibrant, amazing place. Yeah, so Benner's, it's very typical Irish hotel. You know, there's nothing extravagant or very, you know, modern about it. It's just solid. It's a solid hotel.
Mm-hmm. Down in that part, the southwestern tip, you know, how does that differ? Like in terms of if you were traveling there, your experience of its topography, like what it looks like, what it feels like?
It's just beautiful down there. You have the Blaskets, what you call the Blasket Islands,
I've never heard of them.
What they're called locally as the sleeping giant. You can see this island, and it looks like a man who's asleep in the water. So wherever you look out, you know, you've got this visual of those islands. And then it's really rugged. A lot of kind of, when you're driving around the coastlines, a lot of kind of big drops and big cliffs and huge rocks coming out of the water. So this idea of very dramatic coastline. And then you have a lot of old stone walls, you know, built hundreds of years ago, that kind of very loosely split up the fields. And as you say, the weather's so extreme. It can go from dark, kind of foreboding weather to just like blindingly beautiful.
Yeah, totally. And you became very quickly the most successful female DJ in Europe, and you launched a music festival. You changed people's lives by breaking them on the radio and championing new artists and new music, and DJed all around the world, and I imagine some incredible places. On reflection, like you said, you know, by the time this comes out, actually, I think you'll have had your last show on Radio One. When you're looking back at this legacy that you've left so far, you know, what stands out to you as the moment that you feel encapsulates it all, that you feel most proud of?
I guess, as I said earlier, I've been trying to remember moments from the past, and I was remembering when I got my full-time job at Radio One. It would have been in 2002, and I was 24 or something like that. And I remember ringing my dad from the desk of the building that I worked in and telling him that I got this job, and him crying and me crying, because it kind of made that move from Ireland to England like worthwhile, you know. And having worked for kind of 2 or 3 years, making F all money, juggling freelance jobs, just trying to make it work in London, and not ever knowing, it was such a relief. So that was a big moment, and that was before the fame or the that kind of success. It was more just stability and security. And knowing that, you know, when you get a full-time job at the BBC, you're set. It's a great, secure place to work. So seeing it through my dad's eyes was like, she's at the BBC, she's going to be grand now. So that was a big moment for me of pride, I guess. And then, like, it's kind of very hard to pick out singular moments, I think. There's been so many. There was a weekend at the start, like maybe in my late 20s, where I kind of did one of my first events, Annie Mac Presents event at Fabric nightclub in London, and put on kind of curated a lineup. And then I did that on the Friday, and then on the Sunday I presented Top of the Pops. And I remember that feeling like crazy, like, oh God, I've done this like really underground, cool dance music night on Friday, and now I'm doing this mainstream TV show on Sunday. So I remember that feeling quite significant somehow. And then, you know, shows, it doesn't have to be the big ones. It doesn't have to be the big fancy interviews. It's just doing a show where you get interaction from people and you know that it's really touched them, you know, and the music has helped them and changed their day or changed their mood or changed the way they think about themselves.
The power of music.
The power of music. Exactly.
So chapter 4, as someone who knows the country so well, can you share with me your Irish hidden gem, a place that you love that maybe my listeners wouldn't know so much about?
Sure. So there's a place that we went last year called Loch na Fuaigh, which I'd never heard of. I literally just did very impulsive, impatient, oh, that looks like a nice house by a lake. We'll give that a lash. Didn't really look into the area or anything. I knew that it was close to where we were coming from, and I thought we could just drive there and stay there and see what it was like. It's very near the border of Galway, but it's in County Mayo, and it's in this beautiful, beautiful mountain range that is just stunning. Like, it feels like you're on another planet when you go there. It's really, really remote. There's no houses. There's a couple of sheep, but it's just these huge, dramatic mountains and this kind of road, winding road that runs through it. And then you kind of come over a hill and then you're presented with this huge vista. And in the middle of it is this lake, and that is Loch na Fuaigh. And you drive down kind of winding roads, very steep, over little rivers, and eventually you get there. And there's only one beach on this loch, and it's this golden arc of sand. It's so ridiculous. It looks like it's man-made. It doesn't feel like an Irish beach. You know, there's no pebbles. It's just this beautiful golden arc of sand. And then you have this huge freshwater lake surrounded on both sides by mountains.
That sounds amazing.
It's mad. I thought I was like, am I in some sort of, is this, what's going on? I couldn't believe it. And what was mad is when we got there on the first day, there was people there from all different walks of life. So there was people that looked like kind of Arab persuasion who were smoking shisha pipes. There was people speaking Polish. There was kind of, it felt like very international, the people that were on this beach, which made it even more exciting because, you know, we were in such a remote area of Ireland.
Right. Added to my Irish travel wish list. Finally, then, we are on to the last chapter of your travel diaries, and that is the destination at the top of your travel bucket list in Ireland.
Yeah, so I haven't really spent a lot of time in County Donegal, which, for those who don't know, is the very top, like, northwesterly point of Ireland. It's supposed to be, again, really rugged, really beautiful, and I would like to go and have a proper kind of mooch around there and do the whole coast of there. There's islands there as well, Aran Mór, that I'd love to explore. And one of the things I've always wanted to do in Ireland is spend more time on the islands that are off the west coast.
Also, I didn't actually really know that there were that many islands off. So you can go in, are they ones that you can stay on?
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's, yeah, so there's big islands off the coast of County Clare. And there's actually this festival that my friend Mary runs, someone who I know from other voices from coming to that. And it happens every 2 years. It's on an island called Inish Oar, and it's a music festival. And so you get the boat over there and just stay on this tiny island. It's called Drop Everything. So I would love to do that. I'd love to do that kind of holiday where you can just go what feels like a proper adventure, you know, and experience some music as well.
Oh, we all need to drop everything and go and explore. Right. That sounds wonderful. Listen, thank you so much, Annie. That was just wonderful to be transported to so many places in such a beautiful country. Those were your Irish travel diaries. It's been a real honour. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. Thank you. And everyone come to Ireland. You won't regret it.
Next up, we're joined by travel writer and Ireland expert, Aoife O'Riordan. Aoife O'Riordan, welcome to the Travel Diaries. Thank you so much for joining me today on this inspiring Ireland special. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you very much for having me and inviting me to do it.
And, you know, we just obviously heard from Annie Mack about her Ireland travel diaries, and she and I were just talking about the Wild Atlantic Way, the road trip down the West Coast, and which, if you were to do a little pocket of it, was there a bit that you would think would be most spectacular?
Well, I mean, the sort of County Kerry, West Cork section would be one of the kind of most spectacular sections, but then also the kind of northerly part, which would probably be less kind of busy, would be up around kind of the coast of Donegal, which is also equally spectacular in its own different way. I suppose the topography sort of differs in the north very much to the southwest. So the southwest is kind of very dramatic, kind of mountains colliding with the sea and lots of little coves and inlets and strands. You know, the kind of climate down in the sort of southwest is a little bit more temperate and sort of damp. So you get these kind of amazing sort of almost tropical gardens in certain little pockets of the kind of topography. So that's kind of really interesting to kind of come across.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to do it. And she also mentioned that she was originally planning to study at Trinity College Dublin, where Normal People is set and was filmed. And you have a very special connection to that show.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, my husband was involved in making that show, and he's also in the process of making Conversations with Friends, which is obviously her first book. So they're just in the process of filming that at the moment. So they've been shooting that mainly in Belfast, actually, and also in parts of Dublin, in also Trinity is reprising its role again.
And is it? Then,
yes, it is. I mean, apparently the sort of admissions for Trinity rocketed last year when everyone sort of fancied themselves as a real life Marianne O'Connell.
No way.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
So funny. Yeah. So did you meet the cast?
Yeah, I mean we popped in a couple of times during filming. So
yeah.
So yeah, we had a little bit, but obviously, you know, unfortunately none of them have been able to celebrate the great success because they've all been stuck in rooms during COVID. So
that was so weird when they yeah, I guess, and that party's been postponed and postponed, but I mean, I remember at the time when their Instagram accounts were like growing by hundreds of thousands by the day, and they were getting all this, yeah, everyone was winning awards and they were just doing their acceptance
it was
speeches
really crazy.
And then
yeah literally, you know, and so that's been, I think, really surreal because they literally became like overnight sensations. So I think that's like a big career shift.
Totally. I mean, you have to forgive my curiosity about this. I told you when we were messaging before we started that I am perhaps a what could be deemed a normal people super fan.
Yes, before we around.
So I just did wonder, as you know, someone who is like experiencing it, I suppose, by osmosis, did you have a sense, or did you both have a sense when it was being made that it was going to be such a phenomenon?
I think they, you know, obviously because of the sort of the love that the book has, you know, there's already a kind of an audience there for it. So but yeah, I think they obviously, with Daisy and Paul, they knew they had some like really special talent, and they just, you know, obviously got on like a house on fire. So you know, there, it was really special, and I think lots of people who worked on it felt it was special, but I think they didn't really quite appreciate. I mean, it was like a complete moment in time when that, which will probably never be repeated in terms of, you know, people being at home looking for things to watch, and
a global zeitgeist moment,
which, you know, is just kind of pretty extraordinary. I know it's funny actually because it's being repeated on Irish TV at the moment, and you know, it's funny when you watch it again, it's still completely kind of compelling and captivating. Oh, and, you know, it's one of those
I need to watch it again
come back to.
Yeah. Anything you could tell me about conversations with friends? Do you think it will have the same impact on the cast that are going to be performing in that?
Some of them are sort of probably better known than sort of Daisy and Paul would have been. Well, Paul obviously was like, you know, it was kind of like his first big TV job. So, but they have got a kind of quite an unknown sort of lead actress for the main part. But it's a completely different story. I don't know if you read it, but it's a very different kind of story. So I suppose it'll find its own kind of audience and way.
How exciting. Well, do you know when that will be coming out?
I think it's coming out maybe next year sometime.
Oh gosh, yeah, I've got to wait.
I know it'll be funny because I think, I suppose, when, because Normal People was such a big hit, it's sort of, you know, when like anything that's, I mean, it's not a follow-up, but I suppose that's what people will think. So, you know, it's kind of going to be interesting to see what the reaction to it is.
So as an Ireland destination expert, I wondered first if you'd be able to share with us where you would tell a first-time visitor to Ireland to head to first, if it was their very first trip?
Well, I guess, I mean, obviously Dublin has a huge appeal for anyone coming to Ireland, and it's somewhere that you have to kind of spend a couple of days at least kind of just, you know, wandering around. And, you know, Dublin kind of creeps up on you, sort of like it's beautiful in parts with its beautiful Georgian architecture and sort of medieval streets and the River Liffey running through it. But I think it's somewhere that you kind of need to spend a bit of time in and just kind of like throw the map away and just kind of wander around. So I definitely say, obviously, it's very important to spend a bit of time and just, you know, wander around Trinity, visit some of the museums, get a sense of, you know, the history and culture of the city. And then I'd probably say, because obviously Dublin, one of like the huge assets of Dublin is its kind of proximity to the sea, which it's, you know, set on, but also the countryside. You know, you can literally be in the Dublin Mountains and the Wicklow Mountains within 20 minutes of leaving the kind of city limits. So that's obviously really great thing to be able to do. You know, there's lots of amazing day trips you can do and come back to Dublin in the evening. So I think that's something you really must do, is kind of just get out of the city, even if it's just for a day or two. And I'd probably say the first place I'd go would be to just explore County Wicklow, which is immediately south of Dublin, which is just a very beautiful county with very long coastline. And then the interior has the Wicklow Mountains, and there's some really beautiful places to see there. One of which I would say would be Glendalough, which is a very kind of historic 6th century monastic site, which is kind of set in this beautiful valley that's kind of gashed by a glacier. So there's these two sort of beautiful glacial lakes, and then a sort of round tower poking up through the sort of foliage, and it's one of Wicklow's national parks. So that's
That sounds beautiful. How amazing to have that so near to the city.
It's really stunning. And then, you know, there's obviously, like everywhere, I suppose, sea swimming has become a huge thing here as well.
So, oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. But there's always been kind of a culture of it, because there's a sort of a suburb of Dublin called Sandy Cove, which is like a beautiful kind of seaside suburb. And there's a
Sandy Cove.
Yeah, Sandy Cove. And there's a place called 40 Foot, which used to be kind of men only swimming spot, which is kind of mentioned in Ulysses, and sort of lots of people swim there, like literally religiously every day. It's sort of 6 a.m. and like literally all through the day now there's people swimming there. And then, you know, you can go out to Bray, which is another town sort of south of Dublin, or north to kind of Howth and Skerries. Like there's just so many beaches to choose from and places to swim. And so
people swim in it all year round. Are they wearing wetsuits or?
No, a lot of people will just go in their swimming costumes. It's like even at Christmas, there's a big Christmas Day swim at 40 Foot. Everyone goes swimming. Well, you know, they're really committed, obviously. But
that sounds lovely. Yeah, I mean, I do think that cities that have beaches are definitely my favourites. I wish that we had one here in London.
Yeah, and what I would say, which is actually a really sort of economical way to see it, is there's a great sort of commuter line that kind of skirts the coast of Dublin Bay called the DART, which stands for Dublin Area Rapid Transit. And it's like a kind of a commuter line from the suburbs, but it literally kind of hugs the coast from Howth, which is the gorgeous like kind of fishing village with, you know, lots of lovely houses, all the way around kind of through Dublin City and then south down to Greystones and through Dorky, which is another lovely kind of suburb, and Killiney, where, you know, people like Bono from U2 live. So you get to see kind of the whole kind of like sweep of Dublin Bay, you know, which only takes like an hour or two. So, and you can just hop on and off wherever you fancy. So
it's a train
way to see things. It's an overground train, but it's a great way to just get out of the city for a little while.
That's a great tip. It's amazing, isn't it, how these kind of branch lines, they're kind of a bit of a hidden gem, aren't they, in the sense that you can see much. And
no, absolutely, yeah.
So how about your all-time favourite Irish destination?
I suppose Kerry does have a special place in my heart because I've been going there for a long time. It's physically quite far away from Dublin. It takes like 4.5 hours to get there, and it sort of feels like a kind of a place apart. You know, it's like it's got Ireland's highest mountain range, which is called the MacGillicuddy's Reeks, and Ireland's highest mountain. And then there's just this kind of beautiful kind of coming together of the sea and the mountains and the landscape, and then lots of little towns along the way, you know, coastal towns, and then lots of the lakes of Killarney sort of a little bit inland. And I suppose the Ring of Kerry is obviously a very famous sort of driving route on the Iveragh Peninsula. So it's kind of like there's 5 different kind of fingers sticking out in the southwest of Ireland. And there's like the Dingle Peninsula, which I know Annie Mack was talking about having visited a few times. It kind of appeals to everyone, I suppose, because you've got the kind of like, you've got hiking trails, you've got the sea, so you can go on boat trips, you can kayak, you can, there's some really stunning like gardens in that part of the world. And then there at the sort of tip of the Berra Peninsula is this really great little cable car that takes you across to this place called Dersey Island. So it's the only cable car in Ireland. It just kind of literally, it goes across the sort of a narrow channel. And people, you know, you go there and there's a nice walking trail and stuff to do there. And Kenmare obviously has amazing restaurants, and it's got some great hotels. So So yeah, it kind of appeals to foodies, you know, families, anyone really. So that's definitely somewhere worth putting on the list.
Well, actually, speaking of great restaurants, great places to eat, I mean, Ireland is known in particular for having such great food and drink. Is there a particular favorite haunt that you have, a favorite restaurant or a favorite bar that you would tell someone coming to Ireland that they must get to if they can?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's the kind of whole food culture here has really kind of exploded. Mm. It's been really interesting. So I was in West Cork a couple of weeks ago and I had probably one of the best meals I've had for a long time in a restaurant called Day Day at the Customs House, which is run by a Turkish chef who came to Ireland a few years ago, and he opened the restaurant last year just before COVID struck, so he had to close. But even having only been open for a couple of months, he was awarded a Michelin star.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was like totally on my—
that's really, yeah, hitting the ground running.
It's really interesting because he kind of he uses sort of Irish produce, and he's very passionate about using the— like, Cork is an amazing place for— it's in Baltimore, which is a tiny little beautiful coastal village which is very renowned for its kind of sailing and boat— general boat culture. And so he uses a lot of Irish local ingredients and fresh seafood, but he also kind of infuses them with his great kind of Turkish twist. So
God, that—
so yeah,
amazing.
It's like a really exciting kind of sort of riff on Irish food. And his parents sent him spices from Turkey every couple of weeks. So so that's—
wow.
Yeah, so that was really wonderful.
Oh God, I want to go there now.
And I think the other really amazing thing at the completely other end of the scale is, I mean, I know it's been happening in other places too, but the kind of whole food truck culture has totally exploded in Ireland. So—
oh, really?
Yeah, so that's been— and obviously with COVID has kind of sort of sped things up a little bit. But so you get all these kind of amazing food trucks, not just in Dublin. I mean, there's some really good ones in Dublin, but they're kind of popping up all over the countryside now in some of the most remote kind of crazy locations all over. So there's a couple of really great ones, one of which is quite well known, but it's still definitely worth a visit if you're willing to queue, which is called the Misunderstood Heron, which is this tiny kind of food truck in the west coast of Ireland in Connemara, just on the sort of shores of Killary Fjord, which is kind of Ireland's only fjord. And that they kind of serve kind of local produce, and that's got a huge following. And then there's another one kind of also in the same neck of the woods called the Sea Hare, which is more of a kind of a pop-up cafe, but it sits on a pier, Cleggan Pier, which is in County Galway. Mm-hmm. And then there's a great one in Dingle at the back of this like very typical kind of Dingle pub called Paddy Brosnan's Bar, and at the back they've got this great like Mexican taco truck called Mex West. So you can buy your tacos and then go into the bar and get your pint of Guinness and sit at a table.
Well, I mean, if that doesn't sell my lovely listeners on food and drink in Ireland, I don't know what will. I'm like literally thinking, how can I get over there and how can I try out all of those places already?
Yeah, there's another great place I came across in West Cork a couple of weeks ago, which is in a lovely town called Ballydehob, which has quite a few great places to eat. But there's somebody's taken over, has like repurposed a petrol station and into a restaurant. So, and it's obviously kind of suits the Irish weather because the forecourt is obviously covered, so you're not going to get rained on. So that's called Ballybia 8, and that's kind of serves throughout the day, and then they have music in the evening. So that's been a huge hit, and it seems to be booked out all the time at the moment.
What great recommendations! Thank you so much. And I mean, all of those are, frankly, perfect hidden gems in terms of what a hidden gem should be. But I know that Ireland has so many hidden gems. Is there one in particular that you would like to share with us?
Ireland's kind of gone really crazy for greenways. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a thing here. So there's quite a few disused railway lines all over the country, mm-hmm. and they've been repurposed as kind of off-road hiking and biking routes. So the Great Western Greenway in County Mayo was kind of one of the first ones, and that's 42 kilometers, and it goes between mm-hmm. Mulroney and Achill Island. So that's a hugely popular destination for families. And then they've also just in March of this year, they just opened the Royal Canal Greenway, which is a 130-kilometer walkway and cycleway along a historic canal between Dublin and County Longford.
Wow.
I suppose the other places I would say to try and go and see would be somewhere like the Aran Islands, which is off the coast of County Galway. They're kind of really kind of feel like a real throwback in time. There's sort of three of them, and there's Inishmore, Inishsheer, and Inishman. And they're just these very kind of windswept, ravaged kind of islands with beautiful dry stone walls and amazing kind of, there's a beautiful prehistoric stone fort on Inishmore called Dunangus, which kind of just overlooks the kind of crashing waves of the Atlantic. So that's kind
of...
Can
you stay there?
Yeah, you can. You can stay in Inishmore. And also I've stayed Inishman. There's a really amazing place to stay there called Inishman Restaurant and Suites, which is... a couple, one of them is from Inishman, and they opened this gorgeous sort of purpose-built restaurant with rooms, and they use all the kind of local produce. And I mean, it's truly extraordinary place to go. And it's all, really? It's kind of, wow, built to kind of mirror the vernacular architecture and dry stone walls. And you just, it's like being, it's really hard to describe, but it's just like unparalleled experience, and it's always booked out because anyone who goes there wants to go back immediately afterwards.
Really? Okay, that is amazing. I've never heard of it.
Oh yeah,
I love hearing about places like that.
Yeah, it's really fab, and that's really beautiful.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for providing me with so, and all of us, with so much travel inspiration. Ireland is one of the first places that I want to get to now that we can travel there again. So now I've got an endless list of places I want to discover, and I'll probably be in touch, Aoife.
Absolute pleasure, and hope you'll get over here soon.
Oh, wow. What a deep dive into an incredible island. I hope this episode has inspired you as much as it has me to discover more of Ireland. All the destinations mentioned today by Annie and Aoife are included in the episode show notes and on the traveldiariespodcast.com. To find out more about visiting the island of Ireland, head to ireland.com and check out the travel pages of your favourite newspapers and travel magazines. They're always great resources for the latest travel news, new openings and must-see spots. And to find out who is on next week's episode, the season 5 finale, come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and as ever, I'd love to hear from you. Have a great week, and I'll be back on Tuesday.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like,
Last autumn, when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn, when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.